Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 259, and it is 21 April, Sunday afternoon. I usually don't do afternoon episodes. I usually do them at night, but I had nothing cooking this afternoon. I got some other stuff to do tonight, so I said, what the heck? So it's only 8 stories, very, very short episode. We'll start with U.S. CENTCOM. The first two stories are follow-ups from I think the last episode we did where we talked about strikes in Iraq. Well, we didn't talk about a strike in Iraq. We talked a little bit, and then we talked about the strike in Iran. So we'll start with one, the kind of cryptic CENTCOM tech, X Twitter from 19 April, where it said, U.S. CENTCOM, 19 April, we are aware of reports claiming the United States had not conducted airstrikes in Iraq today. These reports are not true. The United States had not conducted airstrikes in Iraq today, which is still the same one. There's no CENTCOM X for 20 or 21 April. That's still the only one. I didn't understand what it meant. I read it. We moved on. Well, I guess there was a strike. This is from Times of Israel yesterday, 20 April. Blast rocks base used by Iraqi coalition of Iran allied militias. U.S. denies involvement. Iraq says one killed, no jets or drones in the area at the time of explosion. Military official says blast was in warehouses storing equipment. Israeli official, nothing to do with us. So Israel says it wasn't us. The United States says it wasn't us. This from 20 April, Times of Israel. One person was killed and several wounded in a blast overnight on an Iraqi military base housing a coalition of pro-Iranian armed groups, security sources said on Saturday. So this story is from yesterday, Saturday. These are pro-Iranian armed groups that were hit. The explosion hit the Kalsu military base in the Babylon province south of Baghdad, where Iraq's popular mobilization forces, or Hashed al-Shabi, is stationed, according to an interior minister source and military official. It hit Kalsu. There were no drones or fighter jets detected in the airspace of the Babylon area before or during the blast, the military confirmed in a statement. In a statement, Hashed al-Shabi said the explosion had inflicted material losses and casualties without specifying the number of wounded. Israel has no connection to blast in Iraq, an Israeli official told CNN, and that the IDF does not comment on information published in foreign media. So, whoever did it. Israel said they didn't do it. The United States said they didn't do it. Anyway, that's it. That's kind of the connection to the cryptic tweet from 19 April by U.S. CENTCOM. Just closing the loop. Next, follow-up story on the so-called alleged Israel strike in Iran. This from New York Times by way of Times of Israel, 20 April yesterday. Israel used radar evading missile to hit S-300 defenses near Natanz nuke site report. New York Times says the attack was calibrated to show Israel's capability to dodge Iran's air defenses and make Tehran think twice before another assault. For their part, Iran says they were facing merely, quote, toys. The alleged airstrike overnight, Thursday to Friday, this has been a couple of days now, on Iranian air defenses near the Natanz nuclear site. The alleged Israeli strike used a high-tech missile that was able to evade Iran's radar systems in a move that calibrated to make Iran think twice before launching another direct attack on Israel. That's from the New York Times reporting yesterday. Two unnamed Western officials cited by the newspaper said the missile aimed to show Tehran that Israel is able to dodge and neutralize its defenses. Here's something from two Iranian officials, unnamed. Two Iranian officials said the strike hit a Russian-made S-300 air defense system. We kind of put those pieces together on our last episode from an article from Breaking Defense where they went over all the air defenses, long, short, and medium, that Iran uses, Iran. And the article said that the S-200 and the S-300 guard the most important sites in Iran, and we kind of put it together that the S-300 was probably hit. According to this article from New York Times, by way of Times of Israel, it was an S-300 air defense system that was hit. These Iranian officials told the newspaper that Iran had not detected intrusions into its airspace from drones, missiles, or aircraft. New York Times said the missile was fired from a warplane far from Israeli or Iranian airspace. The report also said that neither plane nor the missile had entered Jordanian airspace, a calculated move to keep Amman, Jordan, out of any potential ramifications for the reprisal strike. Satellite imagery, seen by the Times of Israel showed damage to the radar of the S-300 system at the 8th Shikari Air Base in Isfahan, said to be part of an array defending the nearby top-secret Natanz nuclear site, which we kind of went into some detail last episode. I think it was last episode. Next, Rafah. We're keeping an eye on this, of course. Netanyahu hints at a Rafah operation, vows to free hostages. This is from Jerusalem Post, Tova Lazaroff, on 21 April. That's today. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hinted that the IDF would soon launch a military operation in Rafah as he vowed to free the remaining 133 hostages held in Gaza in a special address to the nation in advance of the Passover holiday, which begins on Monday night. Here's a quote from the Prime Minister. In the coming days, we will increase the military and political pressure on Hamas because this is the only way to free our hostages and achieve our victory. Until now, all proposals for the release of our hostages have been rejected by Hamas outright. Netanyahu explained as he blamed the terror group for the failed talks and a hostage deal. Instead of withdrawing from its extreme positions, Hamas is counting on a rift among us. It also draws encouragement from the international pressure being directed against the government of Israel. Another quote, as a result of this, it has only hardened its conditions for the release of our hostages. In language remnants of the Passover story, in which Pharaoh hardened his heart and refused to allow Jewish slaves to leave Egypt, Netanyahu said Hamas was hardening his heart and refusing to let our people go. Quote, therefore, we will strike it with additional painful blows, and this will happen soon, Netanyahu vowed. He spoke to Jews around the world prepared to celebrate the Passover holiday starting Monday night, which is also known as the Festival of Freedom. Minister Benny Gantz, who is a member of the War Cabinet, said, quote, we have not succeeded yet, but we really haven't given up and we will never give up, Gantz said, obviously to release the hostages. So they're going into Rafah. I mean, there's no question about it. The United States can heem and haw and rub their hands, and the only thing they got to do is the United States just either, one, get out of the way, or two, support it. That's it. Moving on. A couple of stories, Russian stories. One, two, three. Here we go. This one's kind of a weird one. I haven't seen this. I learned some stuff. I think this is the one. I'm sorry. I'm looking up my notes. Military plans. So this is U.S. military will begin plans to withdraw troops from Niger in Africa. United States will begin plans to withdraw troops from Niger, U.S. officials said on Saturday, yesterday. How many people knew that the United States had a base in Niger? I did not know that, but they do. Or did, because they're being told to move out smartly. U.S. officials said Saturday in what experts say is a blow to Washington and its allies in the region in terms of staging security operations in the Sahel, S-A-H-E-L. The planned departure comes as the United States officials said they were trying to find a new military agreement with Niger. The Prime Minister of Niger, appointed by the ruling military junta, his name is Ali Lamine Zine. He was negotiating with U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Kirk Campbell. They agreed on Friday that the two nations would begin the planned withdrawal of American troops. That's from a U.S. State Department email to the AP. I'm sorry, this story is from the AP. I apologize for that. U.S. officials said there's no timeline for withdrawal. Niger is home to a major United States base in the city of Agadez, about 920 kilometers from the capital, Niamey. The U.S. used it for manned and unmanned surveillance flights and other operations. The United States has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in training Niger's military, since it began operations there in 2013. I'm sure they built the base too, obviously. Relations have frayed between Niger and Western countries since the mutinous soldiers ousted the country's democratically elected president in July. The junta told French forces to leave, and now they've turned to Russia for security. So I think we were all watching that when they told French to get out and the French got out. But I didn't know that had anything to do with the United States, but apparently it does. A big thing, because we had a base there, had. Early this month, Russian trainers, military trainers, have began to arrive and reinforce the country's air defenses with Russian equipment to train Niger. So they're bringing their own ADA stuff down there. The assumption is they're going to move into the United States' base. I don't know. Doesn't say. The junta told the United States that Russian president was to train Niger on how to operate these air defense equipment. I'll stop right there. So U.S. is out, Russia's in Niger. Now here's another story about Russia in Africa, Libya. Russia funneling weapons through Libyan port, eye and gateway to Africa. This is from Tom Knighton, Defense News, 19 April. Russian vessels have began unloading thousands of tons of military equipment in the eastern port of Tobruk this month after repeated visits by Russian Defense Minister, Deputy Defense Minister, to General Khalifa Haftar, the Russian strongman running eastern Libya. So that's the guy who's the boss of Libya, eastern Libya anyway, Haftar. The shipments began arriving from the Russian-controlled port of Tartus in Syria. It contained towed artillery, armored personnel carriers, and rocket launchers, according to a video released by Libyan news site Fawasel Media. The equipment may be used in part to sustain Russia's growing military presence in eastern Libya, but is also likely destined for countries further south, like Niger, we just talked about, Mali, and Burkina Faso, where Russia has ties to leaders of recent coups. Some experts see uptick in activity as the result of Russia's diplomatic strategy toward this guy, General Haftar, which has failed to stop the warlord from allying with Russia and giving Moscow a chance to pour weapons into the country. We're going to get to this very soon. This guy Haftar, General Haftar, lived in America and is a CIA operative, apparently. Here's a quote from this guy, Ben Fishman. He's a Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He's a senior fellow. He's quoted throughout the article. He says, Fishman, eastern Libya has become a significant way station into Africa for Russia, and it comes after the United States seriously misplayed this guy, General Haftar. There's been a continuous U.S. attempt to engage with Haftar rather than to isolate him, but he has repeatedly defied U.S. requests and UN requests to move closer to Russia. Fishman said that Haftar has received Russian visits and made trips to Moscow. Moscow is reportedly focused on negotiating a permanent Russian naval presence in Tobruk, giving it a foothold in the central Mediterranean. Here's I think, the last quote from Fishman. We, United States, never made it clear that isolation was an option. The next move could be sanctions, although that can be complicated by the fact that Haftar is an American citizen. Aware of the threat, he has reportedly begun moving his accounts out of the United States. Before marshaling troops in Libya, this guy, General Haftar, was a CIA asset living for years in Virginia. And now he's, I guess, the warlord in charge of eastern Libya. Moving on. Last Russian story. What am I doing on time? 13 minutes. Russia received new batch of Su-35S fighter jets. Inder Bish, 19 April Defense Post. The Russian military defense has received a new batch of S-35S fighter jets from the manufacturer United Aircraft Corporation. The first delivery of 2024 followed ground and flight tests in various operating modes. That's from a press leak from the parent company Rostec, and they did not specify the number of jets delivered. The previous delivery took place last October, and this is the fourth batch of 4++ generation fighters received in 2023, or since 2023. These Su-35s were built at the Komsomolsk on Amur Aviation Plant in the Russian Far East, where the fifth generation Su-57 is also manufactured. The Rostec statement hinted that the aircraft is transitioning to a fifth generation system, explaining it is equipped with a new power plant featuring digital control system and controlled thrust vectoring. Here's a quote from UAC director. We produce SU-35 at the highest levels, thanks to the large-scale modernization of production, which has been carried out at the plant over the past few years and is still ongoing. This includes a production line, new Russian machines, and a testing facility. The rapid adaptation of production to the growing needs of the Russian forces has become possible thanks to significant government investments in the development of the plant. And I just take that as that's just the wartime economy that Russia's got going since 2022. Next, two more stories and we'll be done. Poland to join European Sky Shield scheme following thaw with Berlin. I didn't know there was heat between between Berlin and Poland, Warsaw. This is from Jaroso Adamowski. He does all the stuff from Poland. 17 April, a couple of days old. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk announced this week that Poland will join the German-led European Sky Shield Initiative, a continent-wide effort to coordinate nations' air defense-related purchases and procedures. This move amounts to a major policy shift under the new government, as the previous cabinet of the right-wing Law and Justice Party opposed partaking in the initiative due to its frosty relations with Berlin. Like I said, I didn't know there was a problem. Here's a quote from Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk. He said, we will cooperate as part of the European Sky Shield Initiative. They call it ESSI. So if you hear me say that, that's what I'm talking about. Tusk said at a 16 April cabinet meeting, it does not bother me that the Germans were the main initiators of this initiative. Meanwhile, Polish President Duda, who was reelected in 2020 with the Law and Justice Party backing, commented on those plans the same day, calling the ESSI, quote, a German business project. Unveiled by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in 2022, August, as a reaction to the Russia war against Ukraine, the ESSI project initially included 15 NATO members, but more have joined. In February, Turkey and Greece announced their intention to join, and this total number of participating states is now 21. It'll help with the math here because 15 NATO nations are in, more have joined in February, Turkey and Greece joined. So that's 15 plus 2 is 17. Looks like Poland is going to join. 15 plus 3 is 18. How do they get to 21? I don't know. The article doesn't say. Need some help there. Moving on. The program's objectives include improving the interoperability of air defense systems and streamlining joint procurement of capabilities across the continent. In Poland's political system, the president is the supreme commander of the armed forces, but does not have the political power to stop the government from joining an international defense program. Prime Minister Tusk said that Warsaw is carefully observing the Israeli experiences with air defense in order to develop its capacities within this field. The ESSI is functioning with the use of, among others, Israeli systems, he said. In the case of Israel, more than 90% of rockets, drones, ballistic missiles have been struck owing to, among others, the Iron Dome. Quote, this system works. In line with existing investment plans, Poland's air defense system is to rely on the Wisła mid-range air defense system, which features Patriot batteries paired with two other layers of air defense. These include the Nauru short-range air defense system, which is based upon the Common Anti-Air Modular Missiles, or CAM, as well as eye launchers from MBDA. And of course, Pilka, P-I-L-I-C-A, Pilka Plus, is a very short-range air defense battery developed by Polish defense industry. Pretty technical article there at the end, but you get the idea. Last story, I wasn't going to do it. I was going to wait and see what the Senate did, but I did it anyway. So this is about these packages, I guess packages, plural, for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. This is 20 April yesterday via Defense News, Bryant Harris. House passes contentious Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan aid package. The House on Saturday passed passed military bills for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. I guess we'll do them kind of one at a time. The roughly $95 billion package total passed 311 to 112. And includes a $48 billion Ukraine security aid bill. So $48 billion for Ukraine, a lot of money. The package also includes $14 billion for Israel. That passed 366 to 58. And $4 billion for weapons funding for Taiwan and Indo-Pacific allies. That passed 385 to 34. Seems like Ukraine was the most, quote, contentious. 311 to 112. Is that contentious? It looks like a pretty big majority. But moving on. It also includes economic and humanitarian aid for a fourth bill, which passed 360 to 58. This bill also contains Iran sanctions, Russian asset seizures to rebuild Ukraine, and a provision that potentially could result in a ban on TikTok. Oh, boy. Whatever the hell that is. I think I know what it is, but I'm not on it. So there you go. Moving on. Oh, here's the Senate. Here's what the Senate had to say. So Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer from New York told senators to remain in town through the next several days to consider this package. The White House said the president will ultimately sign the House package once he gets to the Senate, I guess. Ukraine has a cumulative. There's some kind of follow-up stuff on history, right? So here's some history. Ukraine is received a cumulative $113 billion economic and security aid since the Russian invasion of 2022. So $113 billion in 2 years. Israel receives an annual $3.8 billion. And in FY24, government funding bill provided Taiwan with $300 million in foreign military financing. The package, so this is kind of an addendum, I suppose, if that's a word. The package also includes $3.3 billion in submarine industrial-based funding as the Columbia and Virginia-class programs remain behind schedule, which we talked about a few episodes ago. Additionally, it provides $2.4 billion for U.S. CENTCOM to support operations in the Middle East. You know, that's expensive out there. And another $542 million for U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. Here's something that's kind of buried in the article, but that's very important. Although the House's aid package is similar to the Senate's previous bill, it makes some minor adjustments. This is not a minor adjustment. This is a major adjustment. For instance, it adds a provision directing President Biden to transfer long-range Army tactical missile systems to Ukraine, a long-standing request from Ukraine President Zelensky. In other words, they're going to get the ATACMS missile. Not the Gimlers, but the ATACMS, which is long-range, right? And finally, here's a quote from CIA Director Bill Burns. You got to watch him. Wherever Bill Burns is, that's where the action is. CIA Director Bill Burns said on Thursday that Ukraine could likely hold its ground if Congress passes another aid package for Kiev, but warned the picture is a lot more dire without one. There's a very real, now this is CIA Director here. There's a very real risk that the Ukrainians could lose on the battlefield by the end of 24, or at least put President Putin in a position where he could essentially dictate the terms of a political settlement, said Burns. That's what I mean by you get a lot of conflicting. One minute, you know, I'm doing stories about how Ukraine is shooting down bombers and how the tables are blah, blah, blah. And then the next minute, you get the CIA director saying that they're going to lose on the battlefield by the end of 24. There's a real risk of that. So I don't know. Depends, I guess, what source you read. I think if I was doing it, but I'm not doing it. You need to bring old Millie back. And then I'll be done here. I'm just going to say this and I'll be done. Retired General, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley. If I was the president, I'd bring this guy, Milley, back. And I'd make him like my envoy. Say what you will about Milley. I always start that. Whenever I talk about him, I always start the sentence with, say what you will about Milley. But he was right about Ukraine more than not. And the fact that he's like somewhere at Georgetown or teaching college classes or whatever. I don't know. It seems like his knowledge could be put to better use. Here's the TV show Breaking Bad, where you got Walter White, who is this genius chemist, teaching high school chemistry. That's kind of like General Milley teaching classes at Georgetown in D.C. You know what I mean? It could be, you know, affecting world events in a positive way. I think a positive way, because he's not a dumb person and he has a lot of great experience. But instead, he's wasting his time. Not putting his time to good use teaching college classes at Georgetown. I could be wrong on that. I probably am wrong on that. But anyway, that's my take, whatever. All right, 25 minutes, kind of a short episode. Is there any more? No, that's it. This is episode 260 in the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.